The Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra continues its season on Saturday with a concert at 8 p.m. in Miller Auditorium. This is one not only symphony ticket holders have been looking forward to, but a number of young people in our community have also been studying the music of Mahler to prepare for this concert. I just visited a school that hosts Kalamazoo Kids in Tune, and they were working on some Mahler music. So here today, I'm very privileged to be talking to the music director, Julian Quarty, back again in Kalamazoo for this concert.
Good morning,
Kara. Good morning. And our soloist for Saturday's concert, principal clarinetist of the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra, Georgi Borisov. Nice to have you here.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yes, I feel pretty great because this is my first Borisov chat.
Yes, we tried to arrange that before.
It's a long time coming, and you have been principal clarinetist for a good long while.
Yeah, I've been here in Kalamazoo since 2011.
2011. Yeah. Okay. Well, we will get to this special piece as well as Mahler 5 this hour. As of tomorrow, a couple weeks ago, there was a shakeup at the top of the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra management. The executive director and the operations manager both left. So things have been a little bit in an upheaval. How are things going at the KSO?
That's right, Kara. It was, for me, it almost coincided with the beginning of my real work here because I'm still fairly new. So the departure of a couple of our top people, it was a little bit of a shakeup. But right now we are so lucky to be working with two of the great dependable figures in Kalamazoo's arts community. We have Dan Gustin and Judy Jolliffe, who have both agreed to step in on an interim basis as we continue our search for a new executive director. And I have to say, just working with them for the past few weeks already, I could not say better things about them. It's so great to have this experience and this vision, and I'm looking forward to what we do in the future.
I'm glad to hear it. The 100th season of the KSO is coming up. Not next year, but the year after. Our plan's still in place. Is everything still on track for a celebration?
Oh, very much. I mean, we're working towards this full steam, and we've got a lot of different ideas that are all going to focus on celebrating 100 years of the KSO. And there's a lot of great programming that'll go into that 100th season. But we still have our 99th season, which will kind of sandwich itself in between. And I'm also very excited about that. We've got virtually everything in place now. I'm dying to tell you what we're going to play, but we're still going to wait until we have our release party, which will be on April the 18th. And that will be at the Epic Center at 5 p.m. And we're having a wonderful little party to reveal our season. And there'll be a whole bunch of surprises. And anybody who would like to be there, please be in touch with the symphony. We would love to have you there.
Okay, so stop by 5 o'clock on April 18th at the Epic Center to see the big reveal of season 99. Good. That's exciting. I love this time of year when we learn about how an entire season has been imagined, and also get to look forward to a whole year of entertainment
right.
as a listener. So Mahler's Symphony No. 5, we're going to have to talk about some of its history, some of its relevance to orchestral playing, why Gustav Mahler is still considered to be such a giant in orchestral repertoire.
It's such a rich, rich tradition that really goes back. He bridges the distance between the end of the Romantic period, the lineage of composers, the Viennese composers, from people like Brahms, I guess you could even go back that far, but through composers like Zemlinsky, obviously Richard Strauss, this lush romantic vision of the world. But then also looking forward, especially in his later symphonies in the ninth, especially looking forward to the unknown, to the future of music, where tonal centers are no longer clear, where there's an abstraction. And also this particular work, which was written right around the turn of the century, he began sketches for some of the movements, we think, in 1901. The symphony itself dates from about 1902, although the first performance was 1904. It's very much, you hear the changing world. You hear the advent of the industrial age. You hear maybe even, you can read into it, militarism and the beginning of these big social conflicts that would encompass all of Europe in the First World War. It's a magnificent, huge undertaking. This symphony brings you on such a journey. And we could talk about so many aspects of it, but one thing that I think is really important is the relationship of the symphony to the at that time very, very young love between Gustav Mahler and his wife Alma Mahler. And in fact, they were engaged and married during the time that he was composing this symphony. And some people think that the very famous Adagietto was something of a wedding gift or a love poem that he wrote to her. And it's one of the greatest expressions of symphonic love that I think we have. And there are even words to this that Mahler had written on a postcard sent to Mengelberg, who was the music director of the Concertgebouw Orchestra and who was a big champion of Mahler's music. And he wrote a little poem that he was sending it to Mengelberg or he was sending it to Alma. I can't remember the details exactly, but I do know that we have this and we have the words that fit exactly to the phrases of the Adagietto, to the melody. So this, there's so much deep feeling connected to it. And as a little aside, which I think is really something quite special, Gustav and Alma were married on March the 9th, 1902, which is the same date as our concert.
117 years ago.
Yes, exactly. Now, we know the history of their relationship, and it wasn't...
Not everybody does.
Right. it wasn't a great relationship. And in fact, she was a very conflicted and difficult person in many, many ways. Also, with regards to her husband, she never in her life never acknowledged his music. And she never thought anything of it, which for me is remarkable how you could be so close to a man like that and not have any clue about what he really
pretty,
was about.
She was quite focused on her own artistic ambitions as well.
She was, and she had written some early works, songs, I think, some Lieder. But as Mahler was courting her, there's a very famous letter he wrote to her, basically outlining that he wanted to make her his wife, but there was no room for two composers in one household. And he basically laid it out to her that if you accept this, you accept to be my wife and my supporter, but you must know that I'm the artist and you're only there for... I mean, this is not...
this is a terrible basis.
If I tried that with
marriage.
My wife, it would would never work.
No.
It's not a great basis for a relationship. But, I mean, also, we're looking at it now through the lens of 2019 when we've come a long way.
But it's fascinating that there's a whole documented history. They wrote letters to each other.
Yes.
You can really dive in and make up your own mind.
Yes,
about,
you absolutely can, and there's a wealth of writing about it as well. But for me, the symphony itself is kind of a snapshot of his emotion and his life and his hopes at that particular point in time, which was very happy for him. The symphony is it's enormous. It's split into three sections. The first section comprising of two movements. The second section is a wonderful, almost a waltz-like scherzo with a prominent solo horn that plays as a soloist with the orchestra. And so we're going to borrow something from some of the original performances, because Mahler actually, in his time, he said that he would like the first horn for that movement to come out of the orchestra and to walk right up and to stand beside the concertmaster as a typical soloist would. We're not going to do that exactly like that, because I think that's a little bit...
The audience would be confused.
Well, it's not only confusing, but also most horn players in this movement don't feel that they want to be in front of the orchestra. But what we're going to do is we're going to take Mike Wood. He's our wonderful principal horn player, and he's going to come out of the section a little bit, and he's going to stand within the orchestra. But it will give it some sort of elevated stature, this solo part. And we've played it now for a few nights. We've been rehearsing. He sounds fantastic.
Oh, I'm so thrilled just to imagine being at rehearsal and hearing this world within itself being created. I don't want to diminish this piece, but I want to compare it to a great film where you walk out of the theater feeling like you've been somewhere else for an hour and 20 minutes, and it doesn't leave you. That impression stays for a long time.
Absolutely. I mean, the music really asks big questions of you emotionally. And it's also to play this symphony and to conduct it is a physical challenge as well, mental and physical and emotional. The music demands your 100% of your investment all the time. There is hardly a bar where a member of the orchestra can sort of take a break and relax and let their mind wander. Everybody has to be so focused and so committed to the goal. It's like running a marathon or something like that. you really demand everything of yourself physically, emotionally, and mentally. And by the end, the catharsis is wonderful. I mean, you feel like you've come from a far, far, far away point, and you've arrived somewhere. And it's a wonderful feeling. And I think the audience gets that.
Well, before we listen to a portion of the Fifth Symphony, I'd like to point out that Mahler's symphonies are bucket list symphonies to hear in a live performance. Doesn't come along as often as you might think, even though he's still one of the great composers. So it's very significant. This is your chance to hear it within a few hundred miles. So tickets and more information are available right now at the Kalamazoo Symphony website, kalamazoosymphony.com. The box office also open, and the concert is Saturday at 8 p.m. at Miller Auditorium. I know you mentioned the Adagietto, but I really want to hear the opening of
this. Let's hear the opening.
Okay,
this is the funeral march. I'll set it up. This is the Mahler. He was drawn for some reason to funeral marches. The second symphony begins with a funeral march. This symphony begins with a funeral march, and it's almost of a military. It has a feel of a military burial. You can hear it right off the bat with the solo trumpet. It's one of the hardest pieces, by the way, for the trumpet player in the orchestra. And Scott is doing a wonderful job.
Yeah, as always. Let's hear the opening of Mahler's Fifth, the concert again, Saturday night, 8 p.m. with the KSO in concert. Thank you.
the world coming crashing down. I mean, this music is so full of flow and life, and it's.
Tried to prepare us, Julian.
Yeah,
I wasn't prepared.
It's amazing the voice that he can draw out of the orchestra, his use of the orchestra and of all the instruments. A master above masters, and he was never satisfied with his own orchestration. The music would always stay the same, but every time he would play this piece, he would change things. He would take something out of the clarinet and put it in the bassoon, or reorchestrate is what it's called. You play the same music, but with slightly different instruments, because he was never satisfied. He was always looking for something that was just slightly out of reach. And the version we play now in this concert, this is based on Mahler's work in 1910. He was preparing this for 1911. He was preparing this for an upcoming season with the New York Philharmonic, where he was music director. Unfortunately, his time there was cut short because of his illness, and which he died from very soon thereafter. But he spent months in New York with a set of parts that he had specially requested from his publisher, and he was changing things and adding things. And our edition that we play in concert on Saturday will be based on these final corrections that he made. So it's something that's even a little bit more special.
Another part about the Mahler story is that he died young, at about 55, 54.
Right.
Of a heart issue, I think. And that he struggled between his two careers as music director. As you mentioned, he was a celebrated conductor, maybe not by his home city.
His adopted home city was Vienna, although he would always say he was Bohemian. He came from an area which is probably now in the Czech Republic, but Vienna was very much his heart, and musical soul was there. And he was very celebrated there for a long time. He probably still is the most famous chief conductor of the Imperial Opera at that time, which is now the State Opera. But at the time, it was the Imperial Opera. And he went in there, and he basically cleaned that house up from top to bottom. And he abolished all of the traditions that had crept into the opera practice. He threw everything out. He hated tradition. He said, we must respect the letter of the score. What the composer wrote, the intention of the composer, was to him the greatest. But not only that, as a music director, he was concerned about how the lobby looked, about the way that things were hung, he meddled and got himself into every single part of that opera with the aim of lifting it up. And he did, because he really left it with an amazing tradition that continues to this day.
Yeah. Yeah, a tradition of rethinking itself.
Yes, right. But he was pushed out of there. This was in 1907. He sort of ran afoul of the politics of the day, and it was a terrible year for him. He lost a daughter to childhood disease that today we could vaccinate for, but in those days they didn't have that medicine available, and it was something like typhoid, or it was something that was very, that would have been very treatable if, you know, even if we had penicillin. He lost his daughter at seven. She was 7 years old. He lost his position at the opera, and he was diagnosed with a heart condition, which would in the end prove to be fatal. And these were these three blows of fate, and he was a very superstitious man, and he was at the time he was writing his sixth symphony, and in the sixth symphony he has this enormous hammer. It's an instrument that he invented. It's a giant hammer, and at three points the percussion player who plays it has to struggle, hoist this thing up above his head and bring it crashing down onto this wooden block. And it's this amazing effect at the top of this enormous musical shape. And this hammer blow comes, and it's the hammer of fate. And Mahler was so superstitious. After these three terrible events in his own life, he changed his score and he erased the third hammer blow.
Because just suspending,
yes, trying to stave fate. Off fate, but he ended up he had an offer from New York, and he left to become the chief conductor of the Metropolitan Opera. He landed there, and he had about two seasons, very successful. But the management at the Met changed almost at the time that he arrived, and they brought another conductor to share responsibilities with him, a man by the name of Arturo Toscanini.
Oh, goodness, another giant.
Yeah, another giant. And so they shared responsibility at the Met for about a year, but it became very clear to Mahler that he couldn't possibly fight against this little terror, who the maestro was a terror. And also Toscanini had the support of the new management, who was also Italian. So Gustav Mahler started to look for another outlet, and he managed to land at the New York Philharmonic, where he was music director for about 3 years.
Even so, any new job comes with a whole lot of stress and a big learning curve, and that couldn't have helped his heart condition at all either. Yeah,
that's probably true.
So he had major industry jobs as well as composing. And did he make it past Beethoven's, 9 symphonies?
He tried because when he had written the 8th, he decided he was going to write another symphony, but he didn't want to call it a symphony. So he wrote it, but trying to avoid the curse of the 9th, as many composers have seen this to be, he wrote which is a symphony in itself, but with voices, Das Lied von der Erde, The Song of the Earth, which is a spectacular work. It's vivid. It draws on Chinese poetry for its inspiration. It is his 9th symphony, but he doesn't call it that. Then he went on to actually write a 9th symphony, and yes, that was his last. He did have some sketches for a 10th, but he didn't survive to finish it.
I'm with Julian Querty, the music director of the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra, who will conduct the 5th symphony on Saturday night. And the concert will also feature a brand new, fascinating, enchanting clarinet concerto by an American composer. Yeah. Jonathan Leshnov, Georgi Borisov will be the soloist for this concert. We do still have time for a little more Mahler, though. Let's just finish up our Mahler story with a little more music, if we could.
Absolutely.
Where should we finish off here?
Well, I have a real soft spot for the Adagietto.
Yeah, don't we all?
It is. It's a love poem, and maybe we won't have time to play the whole thing, but you can have a taste of it. Thank you. Ah, isn't that just gorgeous?
It's meltingly beautiful.
Well, there will be more of where that came from on Saturday night.
You know what I notice is the harp. It's really important.
Absolutely. A big, big role for the harp. Harp and strings.
So if you didn't know and just tuned in, we are having a love fest for Gustav Mahler right now and his Fifth Symphony, which I described, compared to, you know, a great, great film that you immerse yourself in and it won't let you, it won't leave you alone for days and days. This is a even better in a sense because it's your imagination you use to fill in the gaps and the meaning, and it's entirely up to you, a personal experience in the concert hall. What our music director Julian Querti has been talking about is the work that goes into it, the way you take the piece apart and put it back together to understand how to make sense of the whole, and also how to usher a group of musicians through a physically demanding experience, but also one that, you know, where you can achieve some sort of artistic realization and meaning for everyone in the room. It's a major effort, a major undertaking.
It is, and we look forward to it.
Now, during the music, we've been discussing Mahler and Georgi. You mentioned that, in fact, you're sitting out this symphony.
Yes, I'm not playing Mahler on this concert, yeah.
That is because you're saving your skills for your solo spot, the concerto by Jonathan Leshnoff.
Yes, I'm playing the... I was fortunate to be featured on this concert playing the Leshnoff concerto, which is quite a demanding work. You know, he really pushes the clarinet to the limit in terms of like how much you can withstand, you know, playing. And it's a technically demanding work. It's a concerto that, you know, goes for about 22 minutes. There's not many breaks. So I definitely was not playing Mahler on this concert.
Georgi, since this is the first time I've had a chance to chat with you here on the radio, I would love to hear a little bit of your story as a musician. You mentioned coming from the Republic of Georgia.
Actually, my name comes from Republic of Georgia. Yes, because my grandfather is Georgian. And so you call one of your sons in Georgia, often, usually it's older son, you call him Georgie, it's common. So that's where my name came from. I'm originally from Uzbekistan, actually. But, you know, haven't been in the States for a long time. I came here for high school. I came to Interlaken Arts Academy. And ever since then, I was studying and then, you know, started working on Kalamazoo Symphony. Yeah.
So did you go to university or in Michigan or nearby? Or?
No, I went to Manhattan School of Music in New York following my graduation from Interlaken.
Where you got used to difficult winters and...
Yes. So when I came back to Michigan, I was, I knew where I was coming back to, but I really fell in love with Michigan, after being at Interlaken. I think it's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been to.
What do you see as your job when you are hired as principal clarinetist of a symphony? What is your work schedule and how do you prepare?
Well, it's actually a really, I find it to be a really fun job and fun challenge. And I, one of the big things I think about being, leader, one of the leaders in the wind section is taking the initiative. Like, you know, playing with Julian, it's been a joy because he lets you, he gives you, an idea, an inspiration. You can understand what he means, how he perceives the work, and then you have a chance to take leadership, so you put your input and take the wind section with you. And clarinet is, you know, a very important instrument in the orchestra. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you rarely will have a work where clarinet won't have a solo or some kind of leading part. Mm-hmm. So I find it's my job to really be on top of things and be able to lead, be in the right mood to lead the section. And this is what's been so enjoyable to me. I always wanted to do that. And the schedule-wise, for a musician, I feel it varies. You know, for me, my schedule is it's different because in Kalamazoo Symphony we do a lot of outreach kind of engagements. Aside from the symphony concerts, we do youth concerts, which are at a different time in the day. We do partner school visits, where we talk about our instruments, we talk about music in general, answer questions, kind of bring interest to the music of symphony orchestra. And part of why the schedule is also so different is because as a musician, not always, you know, you feel like you can put everything that you should put into a certain work. So sometimes if you're tired, you know, if you're a little bit out, you are not going to be as productive. So that's a part of it. So you kind of have to go sometimes with how you feel also. Yeah.
That's a great response, Gheorghe. I'm a little curious to, I'd like to follow up a little bit with Uzbekistan. And I don't know if you've been back much, or do you still feel a connection with your home country?
I definitely do because, you know, my parents are still there. My brother, my grandparents are no longer living there. They have moved to Russia, actually, but my parents, my mom and my stepdad, they're still there. So I definitely do feel connection. I don't go home that often because it's tricky with traveling and with all the documents. Mm. It can be just very difficult. So we're used to communicating on Skype or other means of communication. But last time I was there in 2014, that was the last time I went. Yeah.
What can you tell me about something in your home country that we don't have here that maybe you wish we did, or something unique about the culture that you like and maybe miss?
Something unique. Well, I miss food from home because the food back there is, you know, not to say that we don't have great food here. Here we have lots of choices, but you know, when I lived in New York, I could go to Brooklyn and, you know, find these spots through friends and et cetera, where you can find the food from back home. Here it's harder, but there are still places, you know, in Chicago or somewhere nearby. So that would be one thing. Weather is really warm most of the time. It's a lot warmer for the most part of the year. So maybe sometimes I miss that, you know, when I have to clean the driveway off. But I don't know, other things, it's hard to tell because, you know, I've been here for so long. About half of my life I've been living in the States. So I feel that I'm really, like, integrated in the lifestyle here. So I really enjoy being here.
I'm speaking with Gheorghe Borisov, who is the principal clarinetist of the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra and is soloist on Saturday with the KSO in a piece by Jonathan Leshnov. And we have 8 minutes left in this hour. Let's give Mr. Leshnov an introduction and the clarinet concerto an introduction. With new music, it's about discovery. And what have you discovered about this particular composer?
Well, you know, you said new music, and it is a relatively recently written concerto, you know, in the last few years. I don't remember exactly the year, but it must have been 2016 or 17. And even though it's newly written, it's a very tonal concerto. So you will hear the tonal center. You'll hear the kind of when it comes back home in the harmonic progressions. And I've gotten in touch with Jonathan recently, and we had a chance to talk about the concerto. And he, you know, just shared a little bit of his inspiration about the concerto. Basically, what he said is, it's like the clarinet he finds to be the instrument which can be really expressive and bring the music to life, just like in the, he says, you know, in the Hebrew alphabet. His background, he's Jewish, and in Hebrew alphabet, you know, you have consonants and dashes below them that bring life to those letters, to the consonants, vowels. And he felt that the clarinet is can be very expressive like that, just like you know, it can be with the Hebrew alphabet bringing you know, life with the vowels to the consonants. So that was his concept, and that was the concept of the beginning of the concerto.
It's like the clarinet can both sing and talk.
Yes. Yes.
And you've prepared the score for everyone, Julian.
Yes.
Do you want to bring a few points you admire about this piece?
We looked through it for the first time last night, and in the second movement, it has an amazing flow. It has this rhythm and this bubbling electricity that continues almost throughout the whole movement. Georgie will have some spectacular fireworks to play on top of what the orchestra's already establishing, but it's a really satisfying piece to listen to, and I think that the audience will really love it.
Well, I'm afraid we have to leave it right there. Thank you, Julian. Thank you, Georgie, for being here on WMUK.
Thank you for having us.
The concert is when again?
It is on Saturday at 8 p.m. at Miller Auditorium.
And will we get to hang out and meet and mingle with you afterwards?
We will. Right after the concert, we do our afterwards, and Georgie will be on stage with me, and we'll talk to the audience, and we'll listen to any questions, and we'll give them a little bit of a glimpse into what it took to put together our concert.
I mean, listeners, if you enjoyed hearing us discuss this music in detail with lots of texture. It's very much the same thing. Musicians love to share their love of music, so consider the afterwards of Saturday night's concert. Tickets and more information at KalamazooSymphony.com. And here's just a taste of the Leshnov Clarinet Concerto.